This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
For the most recent episode of The Monica Perez Show, please subscribe to The Monica Perez Show on your favorite podcasting platform. Baltimore's key bridge collapses, a false flag in Moscow, Trump's day is a big win-win, and more. The Monica Perez Show starts now. Hey y'all, thanks for tuning in. We are live right now on YouTube, Rumble, Rockband, Insta, Facebook, Twitter. We have a show every Tuesday and Thursday, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. It's a newsreel of most of the news of the week I can cover in 2 days. Maybe someday I'll do 3 days, but I'm getting pretty much every single headline rapid fire Tuesdays and Thursdays at 2 o'clock Pacific, 5 o'clock Eastern. If you sign in on YouTube, we can chat. So I have an opportunity to take comments and chat. So make sure you put your comments up there. And at the bottom of the hour, I'll read through them. If you want to listen to this show in its entirety commercial free, don't forget to sign up to iTunes Premium at the Monica Perez Show podcast feed on your that's probably mostly everybody's favorite podcasting platform. Okay. What crazy news. I mean, I was chock full of news when I woke up to this story of the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapsing in Baltimore. I mean, when I hear stuff like that, I'm always skeptical. And having dug into it, I am no less skeptical. So around 1 o'clock this morning, a big ship called the Dali, as in Salvatore Dali, crashed into it. They said they threw up a distress call. There were local pilots, but it was a Sri Lankan ship, I think. And they said they were losing control and were at risk for an allision. So I learned a new word. An allision is when a moving object strikes a stationary object, as opposed to a collision when two moving objects strike each other, at least in maritime law. So here was an allision of a very large support beam of this truss bridge, the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore. And they said they were losing control. And then just before they hit it, it was weird. It didn't look like it was on any particular path. And then it makes a sharp turn. I mean, I don't know enough about steering a ship to see. It looks funny to me, but whatever. The lights go out on the ship. And then you can see whatever. Like, you can see the thing collapse. And witnesses had said they heard an explosion. So, of course, not only do conspiracies abound, but now, in no time at all, articles dissing conspiracy theories have also abounded. So there's conspiracy theories floating around, a cyber attack, or what was the big one? Oh, I think the DEI thing is popping up here. It also popped up in the airline. Like, why are airlines less good than they used to be? And that's because they don't hire on merit anymore. They hire on diversity, equity, and inclusion. And because I kind of saw that airline thing happening coming for 3 years already, I actually have gotten tweets like that. Like, man, you called that years ago. Of course, I don't think it's DEI. I think it's other agendas at work with the airline thing. I do think that it's a setup. I don't think it's that. So I saw then, because of that, that the DEI story was there really for divisiveness, as always, to turn us against each other, to take to what could be like classes uniting us against them. They make sure that we are divided based on race or whatever, identity things. So I don't fall for the DEI thing. I think that is one of the memes that's floating around. Like, this is what happens when you don't hire on merit. I don't buy that at all. I feel like this is definitely was intentional. I feel like it was, you know, an inside job, so to speak. What do I think actually happened? I think what happened was they had the lights go out, so you'd have no visibility on what was really happening there at the pillar. But I'm going to show some pictures. I wonder if I can share my screen. So I'm going to show you the picture of the bridge before. So this is the bridge. Sorry, if you're listening on the podcast, I'm going to tell you exactly what we're seeing. This is just a picture of the bridge before. And the pillar that is taken out is one of the central ones underneath the trusses. And it's like two upside down Vs with a bar across on top, kind of like a sawhorse, and then pillars underneath it. And you can see them. That's a lot to take out. So this ship must have just taken them all out, which means it was traveling at 9 miles an hour. And I don't understand the way the weights work. It's like hundreds of thousands of pounds. But I mean, 9 miles an hour, I basically would think it wouldn't even been slowed down by the first one in order to really take out the second one. But if you see the other one, I'm going to show you a picture of the way it looks now with like the ship in front of it. So for listeners, I'm going to describe it. So now you see a picture of the ship, which is a big cargo ship, and the trusses broken on top of it, like just cracked in half. And you see it nosed up against a pillar that's sticking up out of the water. So it looks like a stump. And it was a pillar upon which one of those, like the thing that looked like a sawhorse, was obviously sitting on. And I'm just saying, when I look at that, that I think that's where... I just think they probably blew it up, demolished it right there. I feel like, I mean, you can tell by looking at it that that is a place where the structure changed. It wasn't like a big solid piece of concrete, but it seems like a weird place to put such a clean break kind of weakness. Anyway, I don't believe that it was an engineering problem. I think that they are designed to be able to take a hit. It was a big ship. I don't know, but I'm just saying what I think is that it was probably done on purpose. And the ship isn't really dented in. You would think if it was hitting at that, taking all four of those sawhorse things out, that, I mean, it would be a little dented, but I guess it's just solid steel. I don't know. I imagine it's meant to take on an iceberg. So at this point, okay. Now, for me, like the DEI thing bothers me because that plays into what I call the incompetence canard. So to say that that things that happen are the results of incompetence, government incompetence, that just hides the plannedness of a lot of events, maybe this one too. Okay. So the Atlantic put out an article immediately saying, I mean, I didn't read the whole thing because it was behind a paywall and I'm not paying for it, but they said, like, you should imagine what it would be like if major infrastructure things just blinked out all over the place. And it was not terrorism. We've ruled out terrorism. That's the same thing that happened with the AT&T outage. They ruled out terrorism so that you have this sense that we are systemically vulnerable, that the entire country is just crumbling under our feet. And there's that, and it's not even terrorism. It requires an entire rebuilding of the entire of the system. And actually, there was another article I didn't get to today about it was talking about a phenomenon called conservatives, K-A-H-N. I guess there's a woman who's trying to, in the Biden administration, who's trying to break up she's saying conservatives like it because they want to break up this corporate power. And she's saying that she's trying to restructure the entire U.S. economy. And if what she was doing was breaking up the corporate government continuum, I'd be okay with that. But she said that even conservatives are beginning to realize that unfettered capitalism is bad. And of course, that's not what it is. It's the opposite. It's they're completely protected by the regulatory state, and that opens this bridge between the government and the corporation. But it looks like, I mean, I look from that point of view, the economic point of view, infrastructure, they're really trying to as Obama said, fundamentally transform the United States. And that looks like exactly what they are trying to do. So the governor of Baltimore, the governor of Maryland said that the bridge was up to code. And that plays into the Atlantic article, which was saying that ships are way bigger and harder to manage than they were before. So even if bridges are up to code, they're not going to be able to handle the new world. And I was actually, I imagine that the agenda here is they wanted to replace that bridge. And it's been around since the 70s. So I guess that makes it like 50 years old. It probably has some historical status. It would probably meet with some resistance if they just try to redo it. And they must want to redo it for some reason, whether they're looking for infrastructure projects or they, you know, somebody bribes somebody who wants bigger ships to go through there. I don't know, but I assume that the main reason is to replace that bridge. So, okay, there are already, yeah, there's, so in these articles about conspiracy theorizing, they're talking about how the new catchphrase for conspiracy theorists are don't let a good catastrophe go to waste. Don't let a good disaster go to waste. I think I saw that in two separate articles. And of course, that's a play on the Rahm Emanuel doctrine, never let a good crisis go to waste. And by that, I mean, if something happens, use that as an opportunity to get done something that you otherwise could not have gotten done. And then I coined the Emanuel Doctrine 2.0, which is if you don't have the right crisis, create it. And that's what I think they're basically, this crisis government has basically really embraced that. So that's what I think about that. More, I'm sure, people who are still have the patience to dig into false flags and get you all the evidence you need and everything will be on the job. I will probably move on unless another agenda item pops into my head. But like, let me see what else the agenda that I was looking at. Yeah, I guess it's just generally divisive. It's the infrastructure thing. I think I covered it. But anyway, I'll let you know if something comes up I find interesting on that. Oh, I know what I forgot. This is terrible. They did it in the middle of the night. And I'm saying they did it because I think it was an inside job, obviously. They did in the middle of the night. So the people who are missing, like six people are missing, people got dumped in the water, were workers filling in potholes and stuff when nobody was on the bridge. And that pisses me off. And my mother pointed that out when a couple of times, one, when Clinton bombed some office building in Iraq in the middle of the night and there were, whatever, seven casualties. And she's like, yeah, they're the cleaning ladies. So this guy who acts like he cares about the little guy doesn't even count when it's the cleaning lady. And he demonstrated his contempt for the little guy other times too, because I used to live in Manhattan and he would close, I don't know if it was during his era. I mean, I don't know if he was president when this happened, but I definitely was inconvenienced by him once or twice. But he would close Central Park to go on a run on the weekends. And I mean, Central Park was the backyard for all those working class families and immigrants and the Puerto Rican families and stuff who were, you know, living, had just moved there and living in small places and would go to the park was where they took their kids and everything. It was a terrible thing to do. Terrible. And he used to do it all the time. And then another time he got his hair cut on a runway and it completely disrupted the airport. My mother used to always point out, like, what a hypocrite. But it's terrible. Those people, you think they don't count because it's only a few people, but it's just unconscionable what these people get up to. Oh, here's another false flag in Moscow. Probably heard about this. It was over the weekend at a place called the Crocus City Hall. There was a sold out show of a picnic, I think the name of the band was, and four guys shot it up, slit people's throats, threw incendiary devices. I think the body count is at 144 right now, and the building collapsed and all of that. Apparently, the U.S. had sent a friendly warning, before the event, telling Putin, so you better watch it, something's coming, because we have a duty to warn them when something's coming. And he found that, uh, He said, this week, Russian state news agency TASS said Putin described U.S. warnings about a possible terrorist attack as provocative statements that resemble outright blackmail and an intention to intimidate and destabilize our society. He called on the Federal Security Service and other law enforcement bodies to step up efforts at preventing terrorist attacks. So it happened. It did happen. And the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, and I think maybe even the Washington Times, but definitely the Post and the Journal had very similar headlines, which said that this tarnishes Putin's strongman image and it makes him look weak. So my first thought was, okay, this is a false flag that we did. If we did it to make him look weak, I mean, that's very naive because, of course, what it makes him look is that they're being persecuted. They are being attacked by outside powers because they know that in Russia, and that they need a guy like Putin to stand up to these people and that he's hitting nerves. And if the U.S. or the West or Ukraine, actually the FSB, the Russians, said it was UK, U.S., and Ukraine intelligence who did it. So they're saying that. So if they were doing it, if they were doing it to make Putin look bad or hurt him, maybe they should have done it before his recent election. This wasn't even 1 week after his election. But of course, in my opinion, I think there's a good chance that it would have had his popularity on election day surge. And it would have even been more overwhelming a landslide than it was already. So that, even though that's what our newspaper is telling us that this is about, it can't be the reason for the false flag. I don't believe that. So we're saying that it was ISIS, and Russia's saying, how the hell would you know? What do you know about our situation here? You're half a world away. And the argument is that ISIS has beef with Russia because of what they did in Afghanistan in the 80s. Really? Before these people were born? And that's a complicated story. They had beef because of what happened in Chechnya probably 20 years ago, which I don't know a lot about that, so I can't comment, and what he's doing to support Assad right now. Seems like kind of weak, but another article in the Journal said, hey, Americans, don't let your guard down. ISIS is pissed off. It's not just Russia. When they look at the Western world, they see us all as one. They don't see the rift between Russia and China and us and Europe as something they care about. It's like a three-sided thing, which is almost impossible.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
So the Wall Street Journal is saying that Putin is blaming Ukraine, and I never got that sense. I never got that sense. Even when I read this article right away, this was in a mainstream U.S. article. Putin has promised to use the full force of the law to suppress the incursions and punish those involved. Dmitry Medvedev, deputy chairman of Russia's Security Council, said on Telegram that the terrorists he accused of carrying out the attack will be found and killed. All of them should be caught and mercilessly eliminated, he wrote, including the officials of governments that committed this crime. So when the Journal says he's blaming Ukraine, they're missing that little S. It was governments, plural. And they have pointed the finger at the U.S., U.K., and Ukraine. So they arrested four Tajik guys from Tajikistan. And these guys, they beat them to a bloody pulp. At one point there's video of this, which I did not watch. One of the guys, they cut his ear off or something and made him eat it. And when you see these four guys showing up in court, they look nearly beaten to death. And that makes my blood run cold because I believe in civil rights, but I'm sure that it was Russia's way of saying, like, you don't want to do this. And I think the story was that they were being paid basically roughly $10,000 in total, $5,000 of which they already got. They were apprehended near the Belarus border, but they were supposedly headed for, a break in the border with Ukraine, where they were expected to be welcomed as heroes. Anyway, needless to say, they confessed. it's hard to take that seriously, but I'm sure that they were trying to send a message. And they said it wasn't religious at all. These guys were just being paid to do it. And that was that. But there was a crazy article. Oh, they said this is from Pravda. So I was looking for Pravda and I came up on Pravda.com, which is totally not Pravda. Pravda.ru is Pravda. And there's an English version of that if you're interested. So Pravda said, the real Pravda said, there are a number of arguments that cast doubt on Islamist involvement in the Crocus tragedy. A, the terrorist attack occurred during Ramadan when such actions are unacceptable. Secondly, the terrorists were not religious and did not have any religious literature in their possession. Their motivation was just to receive monetary reward. And the attack was a concert center owned by a Muslim of Azerbaijani origin. That's interesting. They also said, Russia said that all of the info pointing to an ISIS attack came from a website run out of Belgium, which it pointed out was a NATO founding member. And on that website, it only tells stories that are in the interest of the U.S. and the U.K. That's obviously not ISIS run, unless ISIS is. It doesn't say this part, but you know what I'm saying? If ISIS is purely a puppet of the West, then they would only have articles that reflected that. And I personally think that. I wrote an article once a long time ago called ISIS Is Us, which was picked up by quite a few people, said that for a while there. So I read this, there was an op-ed, I think this was in the journal, by Garry Kasparov, who's a chess champion. And he was saying, it was really a screed. I wanted to read you all of it, but who has time? I'll try to explain it. I'll try to distill it. So he is saying, it took them an hour to respond to this terrorist attack. Putin has a great security service. This makes no sense. I smell a rat. Putin is known for other false flags. I wrote a whole book about his activities in Chechnya regarding that when he first took power. What he says is Putin is suspect number one in this crime because he knows that he will generate support for the Ukraine war if he can convince his people that Ukraine is attacking. So my opinion is, we did the false flag to make it look like a Russian false flag. So I think that's I've coined trialectic. I'm going to count that as a trialectic. This is what he said. Mr. Putin believes he needs perpetual war to hold on to power. He's creating the conditions to radicalize the Russian population further and to fulfill his new mobilization orders. He is trying to create distractions from his crimes, and this attack will draw global attention away from his war on Ukraine. I mean, that's pretty clever. Pretty, pretty clever. Anyway, he's insisting that Biden step up our support to Ukraine. Literally, he says, in support of democracy, which is hilarious because we took out the democratically elected president of Ukraine and installed this puppet government, which is clearly a puppet. Anyway, let's not go down that hole right now. Anyway, but when I was reading this, I noticed there was a little something about a post-election speech that Putin made saying that he, Russia, and that side of the world will be building the new world order, and that the U.S., the EU, the U.K., that our leaders have betrayed us and they think they're going to call the shots forever, but they're not. Here's a quote from that speech. Such a divorce from reality about the EU and its leaders from the demands of society will inevitably lead to a surge of populism and the growth of radical movements, to serious social and economic changes, to degradation, and in the near future, to a change of elites. So, and then he urges the rich people to reinvest in Russia, kind of like autarky. Said it's safer here. They seize your assets. You might as well double down here in Russia, and it's awesome anyway. And I personally think that competition is good. So I don't think this guy is going to run the world, or would be good to run the world. I don't want anybody to run the world. But I always felt, I could be wrong, but I always felt that, like, in medieval Europe, the competition between the kings and the church is what gave the individual an awareness of his own importance and, you know, kept them in line. I love competition. I used to say, my hardcore libertarian days, when I was thinking hard about it, that greed drives productivity and competition checks greed. And I think you could apply that kind of more universally. All right, let's hit this last one about Trump. Two news articles today, good news for Trump. So he had a $355 million judgment, which is taking up interest by the day. So it's up to like $450 million. The judge, I think he's supposed to, has to pay within 10 days. And the judge lowered an initial payment to $175 million. So rather than starting to seize and liquidate his assets, they're going to bring it down a notch for that. But the legal fees of that and his three other cases are ramping up. He starts the Stormy Daniels thing, so stupid, April 15th. So he's going to have a lot of cases. He's going to have a lot of pressure, a lot of stress, a lot of financial demands. All of this, I think, is going to play into, if he loses in November, legitimacy questions. Because he's under unfair duress, he's being politically persecuted. That's certainly, this is a political game. I don't think he's being persecuted. I think he is, but I think it's part of the game. It's working for him popularity-wise, and this is where that comes in. So his Truth Social didn't just go IPO. It has to be something screwy, you know. It went in through one of these special purpose vehicles, a SPAC called the Digital World Acquisition Group. So there was this thing. It's like a shell company that's already on the market. It raises money, and it doesn't know what it's going to invest in. You just have to trust the guys who are doing it. Now, there's been some regulatory scrutiny on this because some people say that they did know exactly what they were doing when they raised money for this empty thing, but they seem to have pushed through that. And Truth Social then merged with this public entity. Now it's going to have the ticker DJT, Donald J. Trump. And that entity now is the Truth Social app, like the Truth Social media app, which is struggling. It is struggling. And this whole thing, the numbers here make absolutely no sense. But that supposedly it's being pushed up. The value of the company, the value of the stock price is being pushed up as a show of support for Trump in his persecution and in people's like hope that he's going to be president. This is screwy as heck. If I'm reading these numbers right, and I think I am, in this one article, which I'll put in the show notes on MonicaPerez.com, in this one article, it says Truth Social made $3 million in revenue in the first 9 months of last year. So that would be like a run rate of 4 million annually and has 5 million users. Compare that with Reddit that went IPO recently. It has 73 million users and over $800 million of revenue. And they're right now, or as of my writing today, they were valued at basically the same, like between $9 and $10 billion. And this, the way, as far as I recall, and I don't think it's changed, and I think that's true for Reddit, you look at a multiple of revenue. When you're dealing with a startup or a tech company that you is so new that you can't really, you can't look at how much money it's making. They make losses because they're building. They take all the money and they build it up. You don't look at that, but you look at revenue to get an idea and growth. So you get an idea of how big it is and how big it's going to be. Then you take the revenue and you put a multiple on it. So with Reddit, I think the multiple was 12 times revenue, which is super rich. And I think they compared it with Snap or whatever, which has a lower revenue. But that would be a reflection of the growth potential. This guy, this is struggling. And it has, whatever, I can't even do the math that quick, like a 20th? A 200th of the revenue, 4 million versus 800 million revenue. and it's valued at the same. I mean, there is something up right there. But it's basically people making campaign contributions, as far as I can tell. And the big thing is, if he needs money, the board can get him out of his lockup, which is he cannot sell for 6 months. And they do that because they want you to have skin in the game. If there was funny business or no due diligence, and in this case, there was no IPO, then the initial price might not be a true reflection of the value of the company. And then they don't want a seller to go in, pump it up, and get out the day after the IPO. And that's actually terrible for the price. Like, that in itself will make the price go down, even if there was no funny business. So they make you hold it for a while. And for him, it's 6 months. But the board can relieve him from that obligation, which, even in the articles I've read, point out that the stock would tank. If he started selling into the market, it would have several problems. It would put a bunch of shares in the market, so they would get cheaper, too much supply. It would take him out of it. And when the founder or the big shareholder is out of it, like, that causes concern, like that he's selling. And it wouldn't, depending on how much he sold, it wouldn't be the vehicle to support him personally anymore. So there's a lot of problems with him selling, but I cannot help but think that this thing is there to get him that payday that I always thought he was going to get. I always thought he was going to get the big payday. Anyway, he owns 58% of it. So this is just billions of dollars from right now. And I think he wasn't. There's an old book called Trump Nation. Read it. And it talks about how he does exaggerate his wealth, which is what that bond thing, that $400 million he owes, is about. But there were no damages. Nobody suffered. The banks did not. He did not renege on the loans. I don't think he reneged on those loans. And there were no damages for him overstating his wealth. So this is a completely bogus case, in my opinion. All right. Oh, and just as a final note, I really don't know, of course, what's going to, you know, I don't even have a good guess of who's going to win in November, but I could see the scenario where he gets shut out. There's legitimacy issues. There always are. Biden wins, and either he abdicates for Kamala Harris, or maybe he gets rubbed out because of all that corruption. Kamala Harris, or they do the Nixon thing where they swap out Kamala Harris. And then he abdicates. And then whoever was his newly appointed VP appoints another VP. And then you have two people in the White House who were never elected, which is what happened with Nixon. So with Nixon, Spiro Agnew was his vice president. He didn't go down because of Watergate. He went down because of something else. And his biography is called Go Quietly or Else. Think about that. And in the White House, when it was Ford and Rockefeller, neither of those was on the presidential ticket. They were both not elected, and they were in the White House. So that could happen. I mean, these guys love to recycle old themes. They love reruns. All right, so I have a bunch of little things after this, but let's see if there are any comments. All right, let's see. I want to try to match these up to the story. So the first story was about the bridge collapse. Frightening Me says it looked intentional to me. Caller on JF show, I don't know JF, said there should have been tugboats in the area. Any marine folks out there to say one way or the other? Yeah, should there have been tugboats? Yeah, but it did happen fast. If you look at the video, it did look like it happened fast. Yeah, it was too fast and no horns. And it was turning. It was going straight, and then it took a hard right. So, I mean, I guess something like that could happen. Anyway. The video shows the ship seemingly at a correct trajectory turn into the pillar. Okay. Yeah, Angus says, I'm so glad I'm not the only one questioning this. The captain was Ukrainian. I completely missed that. Thanks for that, Jack. Frightening says, any sufficiently advanced incompetence is indistinguishable from malice. There are torts for that. It is a terrorist attack, only they're from DC. Ah, Bella says, my brother said it was an insurance scam. Actually, they do say that about the Twin Towers. Among many other reasons to do it, there was definitely an insurance element there. That would be interesting. And I was trying to look to see if it had some historical status that would have made it hard to take down, not just unpopular, like the Twin Towers had the asbestos. It could not, you could not take it down, even if you wanted to. So Clint says, no one in government wants to do anything that will slow down the ability for all of them to grow or to absorb power. Oh, Frightening says the Rahm Emanuel Doctrine was Rahm borrowing from Lenin, that he was the one who originally said, never let a good crisis go to waste, or something to that effect. Oh my gosh, Angus, yes, I was thinking about this the whole time. I didn't know if people would understand it. He says they took a historic bridge in New York, the Tappan Zee, built a new one and renamed it the Governor Mario Cuomo. Now that is effed up. It is, that is right near my where I grew up. And the old bridge was completely fine, no problems. Then they built this monstrosity next to it, which looks like a runway, to be honest with you. It looks like it is something that would facilitate troop movements or like short-winged planes. It's really terrifying. And they named it, the Andrew Cuomo, the disgraced governor, named it after his father, who was governor when I was growing up, Mario Cuomo. Unbelievable. Yeah, Clint says, Putin looks like a man compared to any American politician, and he's no more murderous. Well, I mean, it's hilarious that we act like we can't, we are never to be questioned about false flags, but other people absolutely do it every day of the week. And who was the big general who said, the difference is between what we do and what they do is that we do it for the right reasons. I believe that was an opening quote in that book, Surveillance Valley, which I can't reach. You're better off. I used to stall to try to find my books. Now, this, I think, is a, I think this is the wrong path. It says, when a locality, some quack says, when a locality has to use federal funding for critical infrastructure, they have to comply with federal regulations, not just DEI, but 15-minute style junk in the rebuild itself. Sorry, yes, that I totally agree with. And I looked, I actually started looking like, I thought they'd have the plans already somewhere buried or out front. What will the new key bridge look like? Or, you know, I mean, that's why we'll take a little, people dig this stuff up. I could, certainly could not do it in the amount of time I had this morning. Okay. Stella says, with no competition, there is monopoly. A monopoly on world power is not good. Hey, Eric, yes, this is live right now. Now, if you're listening to this in the podcast, it's not live right now, but right now it is Tuesday, 2:40 my time, 5:40 Eastern. We are live. Doesn't using a SPAC remove that 6-month limitation? No, it is in their documentation, and I don't. They may remove it. I personally smell a rat with the way this thing went down, but. Eric says, social media is just another government-approved medication that makes people suicidal and sad. It's terrible. It's terrible. It's so much worse than I ever thought. Like, not just social media, but the internet and the filthy stuff and the satanic stuff. It's so upsetting. DeSantis just, or he's taking credit for passing a law, maybe just signed a law, I think, banning social media under 14 and needing parental permission between 14 and 16. We're not sure. Like, the newspaper, whatever, wasn't sure it would stand up to scrutiny. But I'll tell you, this is the kind of stuff that drives libertarians to be like, okay, go ahead, ban it, you know? But it is not necessary. All that's necessary is that the filters are allowed to operate. And I don't know if Google's still doing this, but in the day, YouTube did not allow third-party filters to interact with YouTube. And they could do it themselves. They could totally do it themselves. Stella asks if it was the Frank Church inquiry that took Nixon out. I don't remember. I just know it was the whole Watergate scandal and his denying that he knew about it after the fact. So he was set up, I think, by Dean. And he did not know about it. And it wasn't about the election. It was about some weird prostitute thing with the DNC. I have this book called Silent Coup. And it really is very well researched and documented. And it was a strange situation. But Nixon was not in on it. And there would have been no reason for it. He was winning by landslide. And even after the Watergate scandal broke, he still won by a landslide. So the fact that other powers, the media, Congress, whatever, pushed him out, that the voters kept, the voters voted for him in a landslide. So that seems like an injustice, but he was the worst, right? He did the gold window, he did China, you know, so I'm not defending him on that, but I am defending him on this. And yeah, all he did was never explain what he later found out. I did see that the ship seemed to have lost power. Oh, same thing when FDR died, they picked Truman instead of the VP because they gave him a new VP in the last, his last election. Interesting. I forget who his VP was before that. Funny. James says, I guess we'll just have to build back better. Yes, James. Yes, we will. Yeah, Truman was VP for a short time, but who was before that? Who'd they take out for Truman? Moscow happened on 3/22, which is Skull and Bones Day. That is correct. Oh, interesting. Can I do a deep dive on the program on Netflix? The troubled teen industry is one that's ignored. You know, that is a great idea. The deep dives are so time consuming, but maybe I may be able to, as my life gets a little less hectic. It's kind of hectic again, though. Well, it's not hectic, but these things happen in clusters. I have my beautiful, sweet, super fluffy golden retriever is super sick. And she's 11. She's not going to make it. But man, it's hard for me to concentrate. She's really... So I feel like I'm not taking on another... Like I was going to say, I'll do a deep dive once a week, but I'm waiting until my world really settles down. I don't know. Oliver Stone, what's my opinion on Oliver Stone? I know. I go back and forth. And his son... had a relationship with Guido Preparata, whom I have nothing but respect for. Guido, I think, wrote... Did Sean Stone write the intro to Guido's book? Yes, I think so. So, I mean, in a world of, like, it's hard for me to believe anyone is real, even if they're limited hangouts, they're limited hangouts that I think move the ball forward. If they feel like they have to give us that, I think that's better than... complete and utter nonsense. JB says, was that bridge built by IKEA? All right. I know. Thank you, Frightening, about the dog. She is so unbelievably cute. I don't have a picture of her on this computer, but she's just ridiculous. She was a failed breeder. We basically ransomed her. I was going to say we'd rescued her, but we had to pay big money for her, but she was just so cute. They clipped her bark. She was always locked in a cage. She didn't know her own name. But now she's just so adorable. the bridge collapsed on its own footprint. And it is a flat pack now. All right. So let's see. Should I do a couple more? Let me just a couple of quickies here for you. The SBF, Sam Bankman-Fried. He is supposed to be sentenced this week, and he's also supposed to start a trial on bribing Chinese officials. I don't know. Brucey, the boat was carrying jet fuel. So the word was not out, I guess, that I had a little show because now all my Union of the Unknowns folks are popping up. Tunes, Stilla, who didn't know. Brucey. Anyway, okay. On with the show. So what to watch out for the Sam Bankman-Fried, what's happening there? Because, you know, I think this was also a setup and that he's not going to go to jail for 110 years, like they're saying, or probably at all. The Boeing chief quit. The besieged Boeing chief, Dave Calhoun, stepped down after 4 years at the helm. And part of that, by the way, was that the FAA imposed production restrictions on them. So they were... that is why they were not able to deliver on the orders from the airlines. So the hand of, you know, the hidden hand is not the hidden hand of the market. It's the hidden hand of regulatory agencies with an agenda. Anyway, the Department of Justice is conducting a criminal probe into the Alaska Airlines incident. I mean, that would be pretty serious. Criminal probe. All right. The last thing I will tell you about is that Zelensky and his party want to lower the draft age in Ukraine from 27 to 25. And because they can't get people to join the army. And they're saying, the Wall Street Journal said that Ukrainians are still overwhelmingly in support of this war. However, none of them want to actually fight it. And I would say if you have a war on your own land, in your own country, if it is a just war, which means basically an invasion, you will fight it. That's why I don't believe in drafts, because a just war, I think it's a good litmus test. If you can't get the soldiers to fight, it's not a just war. And I feel like that this is proof positive that they do not want to kill their countrymen. And that's why they needed like the Azov battalion and stuff. Anyway, I could go on forever because I have like four more stories. But I will get to them on Thursday. I'll be back on Thursday. Let us hit this little clip. Okay, what is this clip? This is the CDC released a paper on myocarditis after COVID vaccination. And here is it's the novel coronavirus Southwestern Intergovernmental Committee. Senator Jane Shamp from District 29 is speaking here. And this she gets this CDC paper on myocarditis following COVID vaccination, which, by the way, if you look at the FDA authorization, they invented, I think, phase 5 trials, which is trials in the general population where they're looking at the impact on the general population of myocarditis from the jab. So anyway, this will probably get this show taken down and perhaps my whole channel. Anyway, let's hear what she has to say and I will leave you with it.
I find information like this, you know, inserts for the vaccine. Paper's there and there's nothing printed on it. I find that very interesting, disheartening, disgusting, and lots of other words. But then it gets better. It just keeps, wait, there's more. It just keeps happening. The CDC redacts every single word of a 148-page study on a myocarditis after COVID vaccination. So I asked research to print the study for me. 148 pages. The entire thing is redacted. What good does a study do if there's nothing there? Then I want to know, wait, what might have been there that they needed to redact it? That's even scarier.